Hi, welcome to the iHeart Africa Project podcast. This is episode number one. Hi, my name is Nikki. I run the iHeart Africa Project. I love Africa. It is a very special place to me. And so I'm putting together this project to showcase Africa in a very real capacity, providing insights into Africa from the perspectives of those who love the continent. Its residents, wildlife heroes, conservationists, photographers, rangers, guides, and tourists, who all share their experiences and love of this beautiful continent. On today's episode, we'll be chatting to Stephanie Fuchs. Stephanie Fuchs is a passionate wildlife lover with a degree in biology. It was in 2008 her dissertation saw her go from London to Zimbabwe to study local elephant populations. She is a biologist and conservationist by profession, a philanthropist, blogger, and entrepreneur by vocation, and a Maasai by heart. And on that note, I'd like to extend a warm welcome to Stephanie. How are you today?
I'm good.
So tell us what you've been up to lately.
I've just been busy with my women enterprise, making those reusable sanitary kits.
Yep.
Right now I'm in Moshi because I'm about to go home for a few days, well, 10 days.
Yep.
For a friend's wedding. And then I'll come back, and then I'll have to do a lot of sewing again because I have another order waiting for me at the end of the year.
So these sanitary kits that you're sewing, are these just for the women in your village, or are you sewing for anyone that places an order?
Anything. If I get people, well, the first order I did, that was 100 kits that a girl from Germany wanted, so she bought them off me to give to a neighbouring Maasai village.
Yep.
And then I also did a birthday at POS. Oh, I don't want birthday presents, just buy kits for the women in our village. So I still have to make those kits. I raised enough funds for 35 kits, so I still have to make these kits. And then the lady that ordered for me previously, she wants another 50 kits or even more by the end of the year, which will again go to a neighboring Maasai village. So I do it both inside our village and outside. What, you know, whatever comes along, I never say no, I always say yes.
Wow, that's amazing, Stephanie. So you recently sent two girls, after doing some crowdfunding, to learn how to sew these reusable sanitary kits. Is that right?
Yes, that's right.
So is it those two girls plus yourself that are doing the sewing, or have you now raised enough funds to have others trained to sew?
At the moment, it's the two girls and me, and then there's another girl who has already been trained by another organization before I even came to the village, so she's really good.
That's awesome, Stephanie. This is a wonderful incentive to provide every Maasai girl with a reusable sanitary kit. Wow, I think that you're just incredible, Stephanie, and to provide all the Maasai girls in your village with reusable sanitary kits, something they'd never had prior to then, is just incredible. And on that note, for those of you who are unaware, Stephanie and her Maasai husband, Sikoni, and her young son, Yannick, open their boma up to visitors year-round for you to come and stay in a traditional Maasai boma and experience life as the Maasai do. But this year, I noticed on your Instagram, Stephanie, that you have been inundated with visitors.
Right, yeah. People see me on the internet and they say, hey, I want to come visit you, especially because they see the work that I do to try and help the Maasai. So they say, oh, I really want to see that, or I want to meet you. Even I get a lot of white people who have Maasai boyfriends or even just Maasai friends or who want themselves to try and help in any sort of way. They came to visit me. Like, I was sitting in my house only a couple of days ago, and then all of a sudden this white woman turns up because she's friends with our neighbor. Said, oh, I really want to come and see you because it's so cool what you do. And I was like, okay. But also had actually paying visitors that came to stay as like my cultural tourism thing that I offer.
Yes.
I had four this month. Yeah.
That's amazing, Stephanie, because too often on your African safaris, are you taken to these Maasai villages that are inauthentic? They are fully staged. The villages are just built for the tourists, and no one actually lives there. They come there just to put on a show for the tourists and talk to the tourists, get some money for their village and their families, and then return. So it's amazing that you offer an authentic experience for tourists.
Exactly. And then whatever the people pay me, I give a percentage of it to the women there, and the women absolutely love it. It helps them so much.
Yep. So talk to me about what What was this walk up Mount Kilimanjaro you did? What was that?
Okay, so that is also a lady who saw me on Instagram, an Australian lady.
Yep, that was the Days and for she, Girls, yeah.
Yeah, and she is involved with the Days for Girls enterprise in Australia, in Avoca Beach. So there's a bunch of lady, like elder ladies, that sit and they spend their time voluntarily and they make these kits. And these kits that these girls do in the Avoca Beach team, they're being distributed worldwide by donors. And she saw me on Instagram that I was raising funds for my second project to distribute these kits in our secondary school.
Yep.
And then she said, hey, that's cool, and I'm coming. That was last year in August. And she said, oh, I'm coming to Tanzania in August, and I want to come and see your village, and I can bring some kits for you.
Mm-hmm.
And then she came. Only stayed one day because the other thing that she does, she has a little tour company, so to say, Wanderlust Women's Adventures, where she offers trips up Kilimanjaro, all women trips. And then with the funds that she raises from these kits, she also funds the second sanitary kits to distribute in schools around Moshi and Arusha. But this time she also wanted to see me, so she came and she distributed 25 kits in our village, and we did a little talk about it. And ever since then, that was exactly a year ago, we just stayed in touch. She went back to Australia saying, I'm coming back in March to do another Kilimanjaro trip. And we just stayed in touch, and she encouraged me, oh, think about maybe you want to open an enterprise yourself to teach the women. And I really like the idea because that's actually sustainable. And then she offered me, why don't you come up Kilimanjaro with us in March? And I said, oh, that might be something.
Oh, wow. And how was that experience for you?
it was good, but I didn't feel well from day number one. So on the third day in the morning, I decided I better turn around.
Yep.
And at that point, on the third day, I had the option to walk out, like, and be picked up by a car.
Yep.
So I said, okay, I'd rather do that than go further up the mountain and then have to be helicoptered.
Wow. I heard from the Kilimanjaro tour companies that slow is best, especially with the altitude on Kilimanjaro. Do you think that it was the altitude that made you feel unwell, or were there other reasons why you were feeling unwell?
No, definitely the altitude, because it started after 2 hours of walking up that mountain. I felt sleepy and headachy and sick, and I was sick 5 times that first evening.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, and then the same the next day, you know, in the morning, the next day I felt fine, and then started walking. As soon as I started walking, I felt sleepy. I was like walking and falling asleep at the same time, and I just did not enjoy it. And everyone else was laughing and happy, and I was like, I was miserable.
Oh, you poor thing.
Yeah, that's okay. It happens for a reason. So
would you ever walk up it again?
I would, because, you know, the walk itself is not very hard. It's just a hike uphill, and you go quite slowly, and you have company, so it's a pleasant thing to do. It's not very difficult physically. It's just if the altitude gets to you, it gets to you.
Yeah. It is definitely something on my bucket list, and I think I'd definitely want to make sure I had the best company and people that could make me laugh if I was going, because I like to joke around a little bit. But what about your family? In Germany, do they like to come and visit you in Africa, considering you're living in this strange and exotic and beautiful land?
My sister has a few times.
Yep. So when I originally interviewed Stephanie in 2016, I think it was, Steph, we talked about how she met her husband, Sikoni. So for all of those people out there, Steph, that have been living under a rock and don't know your love story, can you please, in your own words, describe the moment you laid eyes on your husband?
So I was on Mafia Island.
Yes.
And that was my first day actually on Mafia Island. I had just arrived, and then me and some other volunteers decided, hey, let's take a tour around the village.
Yep.
And so we walked out of our camp and we came into the village, and then we were walking along the road, and then we bumped into a group of Maasai, and I can't remember if there's 3 or 4 of them there, because I only saw Sikoni, and you know, he was a bit taller than them. And I just looked at his eyes, and I really liked his eyes. And yeah, I was fascinated, because that was the first time that I'd come in contact, in close contact with the Maasai. I've heard of them before, and I was always fascinated, because I always thought they're so beautiful and exotic and fascinating. So, you know, I met these Maasai, and like one of them I found really, really beautiful. So I was, you know, really happy to meet them, and I tried to keep them there, trying to chat to them in Swahili because I already knew Swahili quite well at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But they're always a bit private Maasai, you know, even though they, you know, they trust us white people, and they're also very friendly. But yeah, they were like, okay, nice to meet you. We got to get going because they're on their lunch break, I think, so they had to go back to work.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but I was so happy to meet them, and I was really fascinated from that day on.
Well, it's just lucky for us then that in 2017 you decided to start your Instagram page and share your beautiful love story with us all. I mean, because it is really, really a fascinating story, especially to those of us in the Western world who cannot comprehend that we cannot just go and have a hot shower. And even though there was no looking back for you, it still must have taken quite a bit to adjust to life in a traditional Maasai village, even though your husband would have been there to support you 100%. What would you say was the hardest thing for you to adjust to when you first arrived in the village?
I think the most difficult thing is, you know, I made the decision, I suggested, let's go and live in your traditional Maasai home because my contract has ended, so, and I want to stay with you, let's try and make our life there. You know, that was my decision, and I knew that if I really wanted to do something, that I could do it, and I knew it was not going to be easy. So I think it's the same thing, you know, when you move. I moved from Germany to England to go to university there, and that was also really hard because I was with my boyfriend at the time, who was British, but I didn't know anyone else. So mm-hmm. I had to start over my life, like make new friends, you know, learn English really well, you know, and get a job and everything. It's really difficult. And same thing when I moved into the Maasai Boma at a whole different level. Was, you know, it was his family. I lived with his entire family, and that's really nerve-wracking as well. There's his mother and his father and even his grandmother there, and his brother's like, are they gonna like me? Or I can't get out of the house without there being 20 people that want to talk to me. You know, you don't get a second alone to you, and that was difficult at first, you know.
Yeah,
but I got used to it.
Did you ever have a moment where they were busy talking away to themselves in Ma before you learnt the language, and you wondered if to yourself, I wonder if they're talking about me?
Yeah, definitely, because I knew Swahili, but I didn't know Ma, and they're always talking, and I'm sure they were talking about me, but that's one thing I learned about the Maasai, and I also love about them, they never say nasty things about anyone else. They chat and they gossip, say, oh, what is she wearing? But they're never nasty.
Yeah.
They're really, really kind-hearted people.
That's just beautiful. Yeah, it was one thing in our original interview, Steph, that stood out very clearly to me. It was just your love and appreciation for the Maasai and their culture. Now that you've lived with them for 10 years, what makes them such an incredible people to you now, after spending 10 years living in a traditional Maasai village and being married to a traditional Maasai warrior?
One thing is just their openness and their generosity and their kindness, you know. To have to accept me into their tribe, and there was never a moment where I felt awkward or where I felt like they don't want me there. Like, straight from moment number one, it was just with wide open arms they accepted me, and that is amazing for a tribe who is so traditional mm-hmm. and doesn't want to mix with other African tribes. But then, you know, my husband's mother, you know, what must she have thought, that her son comes up and says, oh, this is my wife now, this white girl who you know, doesn't even speak their language, but there's never even any negative thought, and that was amazing. So they really, despite being so traditional, they're also so open-minded and kind and intelligent, so emotionally intelligent also, and really, you know, just kind and calm and so even-tempered. We don't have that a lot in the Western world. People are just with, like, the nicest sort of character.
Yeah.
One thing, and then another thing also, which I learned over the years, is that, you know, I'm a conservationist. The fate of the natural world is really important to me because it's also connected to the fate of humanity. And I always fought with everything that I did, you know, for preserving nature. And then when I came to live with the Maasai, I was like, okay, I've sort of left my conservation of work behind, but I realized that actually I don't, because the Maasai, being an indigenous tribe, they rely on an ecosystem. They rely on nature to herd their cattle. So they are actually conservationists themselves. So I found that we have so much in common, and that I can, you know, everything I stand for and that's important to me, that also goes with the Maasai. So we're really similar. So they're not only beautiful and intelligent and welcoming and generous and really wise in a sort of traditional indigenous way, they're also innate conservationists. And that's really, really amazing.
Wow, I just find that so fascinating, Steph. So for those of you who have been listening, Stephanie and her husband Sikoni, who is a traditional Maasai warrior, they live in the Maasai steppe of Tanzania, and they open their boma to visitors from around the world for a small fee, so that you can come and experience life with the traditional Maasai. So my question to you, Steph, is what is it about what you offer visitors to come and stay with you that makes your experience so unique?
Okay. So I think you might know that a lot of the cultural tours that are offered here around Arusha or Moshi, people are being taken to fake bomas. It's not actually an authentic. It's a Maasai village that's basically just been built to welcome guests there. And then so there's a certain amount of women that come and welcome you, and they put on a little show, and maybe some men, they teach you how to make fire. That's a very common thing. And that's it. So it's different to us, whereas it's a very private and unique and authentic experience, because I invite you to my home, into an original Maasai home. So when you go there, you're going to be in a circle. We have a little traditional Maasai hut, which used to be my house, and now I have turned into our guest hut. So this hut is part of like 20 huts that are in our boma that surround our cattle enclosure. So it's a complete authentic experience, and you're gonna have children running around and children coming to your hut and like asking you for sweets or something like that. You know, it's, you're part of our family, and that's what makes it so unique. And it's also, you know, nothing is staged.
Yeah. And so have you ever had a guest staying with you and there's been some wonderful wildlife stroll through and frighten them?
Oh, that has not happened.
Have you had that experience?
Yeah, I've had it a couple of times where we have leopards and hyenas, and they often come and try to take a goat out of the enclosure at night, but we have guard dogs also, so when you hear the dogs bark, you can't be quite sure that there's either a leopard or a hyena around. And there was one time where I heard the dogs bark, and then it woke me up, and I said, okay, I might as well go to the bathroom, and our bathroom is maybe like 50 meters from our hut. So I opened the door, went to the bathroom, had my torch with me. It was like 12 o'clock or 1 o'clock at night. And then I came back in my house, and then I had my husband on the phone to his mother, who is in the hut further down. And I said, why is she calling you in the middle of the night? He says, she wants me to come outside with this spear, because she just opened the door because she heard the dogs bark, and there's a leopard right in front of her door. And I was like, what? And I just went outside to pee, and there was a leopard a couple of huts down. What? But I didn't see him.
Yeah, so you normally send your husband out to deal with that, do you?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, there was another time where we had to chase off a hyena because we had a cow hide out to dry overnight from a cow that had died.
Mm-hmm.
And then we sort of plug it into the ground to dry, and we left it overnight. And then the hyena came and took the cow hide and ran away with it. And my husband had to chase her like in the middle of the night to get the cow hide back.
Oh, what an adventure. Okay, so if we want to get involved, if we want to contact you, if we have any questions for you, Stephanie, where can we go to contact you or read about what you're up to with your projects over in Tanzania?
Well, if they go to my Instagram or my Facebook, which are both public, and my Instagram in the link in my bio is actually the link to my project page with the sanitary kits where you can donate.
Mm-hmm.
So if they want to find out anything about this project, the link, if you click on it, it takes you to my Indiegogo crowdfunding campaign page.
Okay.
And there's outlined everything that I do and what the project is about. And there are also updates about where we've got to now. So that's a good thing. And then also, you know, just my Facebook or Instagram, because I post so regularly about everything Maasai. by not only my projects, but also the cultural aspects and everything.
Yes.
And then I also have my blog, but my blog, I have been so busy that I haven't posted in a while. But also, it gives you a good sort of background knowledge about Maasai culture and also what I do. So, you know, if people want to donate, they can do that via the link. It is also very present on my Facebook or on Instagram. Mm-hmm. But also, you know, anyone can just drop me an email or a private message anywhere. And if they want to donate flannel to my project, you know, just get in touch.
Yeah. So what's on the horizon for you? What have you got on the go next? Next project. What's your next project?
When I get back from Germany, I'm going to have to do a lot of sewing. And I really want to try and get the two ladies that are trained in Arusha to actually get down and do a lot of training. Be able to provide, like, make quality kits with me. That's very important to actually train them. And then possibly we could train some other ladies. The long run, maybe, would be to actually be an NGO to be able to secure more funding and stuff like that. But also privately, I also really want to write my book about my life.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it would create a lot of awareness about the plight of the Maasai. I always like to call it the fact that their culture is actually quite threatened.
Yes.
Yeah, these are the big-term goals.
So a book about your life. Would you call that Maasai story so that people could affiliate that with your Instagram?
Yeah, people have actually come to me a lot. Like, I can walk around town or in Moshi, or people just look at my face and say, "You're Maasai story." And I was like, yeah.
Yeah, I bet you get a lot of people saying, "I don't believe you're Maasai."
Well, actually, I get a lot of people look at me. I have my anklets on and everything. I say, "Oh, are you Maasai?" Yeah.
So if someone wants to buy some sanitary kits to donate from you, where do they go? Can they contact you directly for that one?
They can contact me directly, or they can also go to my Indiegogo page. I made some perks, so you basically select a perk. For example, if you have $50, then that's worth 5 sanitary kits. So actually, if you go to the campaign page, you'll see, like, I made choices between 1 sanitary kit, 2 sanitary kits. So I actually know that their donation is because they want me to make these kits. And then they have to just contact me to let me know if they want these kits to go into our local community or if they want to give them, like, further away.
Oh, awesome. Now, just before you run, there seems to be a lot of interest around one of the videos that you posted on your Instagram feed of a Maasai warrior standing around in a circle and he's swinging his long hair around in a form of dance. Tell us about that.
Oh, the hair swing we do. That is just the Maasai warriors dancing, and the warriors stand on one side and they dance with little girls, small girls. They have not been circumcised yet. Well, actually, they don't get circumcised. They just have the ceremony. So that's a usual way for them to dance. You know, the warriors have this long sort of warrior hair, and that's just what they swing around to look attractive.
So do the girls in your village not get circumcised anymore?
No, in our village, because we've had these German missionaries that have been coming to our village since the 1980s or 90s.
Yeah.
And they did a lot of seminars and stuff like that with the women. And I can't guarantee that it's our entire village that doesn't do it anymore, but I know for a fact that in most of the Bomas, they don't do it anymore. They still have the party, but they're not actually circumcised anymore.
Wow, that's awesome. It's great to see education coming in from outside influences while not interfering with traditional values.
Yeah, because it's possible for them to have the ceremony and still have that status, you know, just do the transition, but without the circumcision. Completely possible.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if there was someone out there that was saying, "Oh, I'm never going to Africa to travel, it is far too dangerous," what would you say to that person?
But what I would say to them, I'd say you shouldn't believe everything that you hear on the media. You should go and check it out yourself, because so many things that they tell you in Europe about what's happening in Africa, like, for example, the rate or the percentage, the likelihood that you can get malaria actually is very small. And the sort of malaria tablets that they make you take in England or Germany, for you to be safe. Actually, they don't keep you from getting malaria. You know, it's all this sort of stuff that we are being taught in Western society, which is true. And then you come to Africa and you actually realize that it's not true. So you need to come here and check it out for yourself, because so many things that we've learned, you are going to have to relearn here in Africa. The truth that we are being told in Europe is not actually the universal truth. A lot of it actually is lies.
Absolutely. I know the lies that I was told before I was to come to Africa for the very first time. So, I mean, I can only imagine what they drum into other societies to scare them off from visiting. And Africa is one of those places that you never fully appreciate it or can understand it or can feel the magic that you experience when you're in Africa until you're actually there. It's just one of those places. And then once you're there, it just takes a hold of you. It absolutely captures your heart and soul. It is just so beautiful. And Stephanie, because you live in Tanzania, and I know you share the same sentiments that I do regarding Africa and its beauty, if someone was coming to Tanzania and they could only go to one destination, they could only see one thing, only witness one thing, what would you recommend that one thing be within Tanzania?
I would say Ngorongoro Crater, because it really is absolutely beautiful. It is a thing that you won't see anywhere else in the world.
Agreed. So that about wraps it up for us, Stephanie. I just want to say a big thank you. Without amazing people like yourself, this project could never have come about, and my love and passion for Africa could not have been shared with the world on such a grand scale.
Okay, thank you so much. I really appreciate this.
No, it was truly my pleasure, Stephanie, and we will do this again soon.
Thank you.
Cool, thanks Stephanie. If anyone would like to find out about Stephanie's life in the Maasai, you can go to her Instagram handle at Maasai_story. So MASAI_STORY. And there is the links there to email her. You can private message her, or there is a link to her website where her crowdfunding projects are. My name is Nikki from the iHeart Africa Project. So follow us as we interview people who love Africa the most. Its residents, wildlife heroes, conservationists, photographers, rangers, guides, and tourists who all share their experiences and love of the beautiful continent of Africa.